Columbia Workshop presents, as number 7 of 26 by Corwin, a soliloquy to balance the budget.
247, 376, 421, 545.
Tonight's program, for one voice only, being a measure of economy, by Norman Corwin, and being performed in relative privacy by House Jameson.
Those of you who've never heard this heathen sound, cock ear. It's a machine that adds and multiplies faster than rabbits, throws honest Greeks like Euclid out of work, usurps the pen, states dogmas endlessly, and like a rash, importunate young man, jumps to conclusions. Heap 10.7 thighs upon its spinning innards for being so exact. Efficiency can be disgusting when it's cold and to an evil end, as in a hostile conquering army which always guesses right while perpetrating wrong. That's what is foul in this machine. Success at every turn. Each time a problem's put to it, it clicks. Ah, well, let us compute the cost of workshop on the air. 9 moods at 50. 4 jokes at 70 apiece. 12 gags marked down to 35 because they only half came off. 2 streams of consciousness. 5 rays of hope. Faith, charity, the virtues, other miscellany. So much for script. Music. Heard melodies. And those unheard. A first-class dissonance. 400 tremolandos, slightly used. Night music. Impending doom. 9 segues, fresh-laid vengeance. Moon glow. 2 gross imitation Wagner, and sundry others. Now let's see the bill. Uh-oh. Too much. Too much, too much. For a week we must economize. Tonight, fiddles of one string. Whole notes must be reduced to eighth notes. Cut down on corn. And as for double entendre, make it single. Now are you satisfied, you slinking and reptilian machine so coiled around with numbers, so snaky in your movements as befits an adder? All right. Phase one of our soliloquy is done with. We will proceed now on a different note. That was the different note. Now get this. We are standing just outside the house that Lack of Jack built. A house called Corwin's Folly. A museum, a waxworks, and a mausoleum full of exhibitions, live and dead. Flora of fauna, minerals, and captive winds, budgets of rare formation, spirits vexed and tranquil, spiderless cobwebs, diamond dust and luminescent pitch. Your safety is not guaranteed. Sorry, not responsible. Well, can you take it, listener? All right, then. Follow quietly. So, first we ring the bell. It would be mad to wait for somebody to answer. Nobody's alive inside can walk. We have a key here, anyway. Hello? Is anybody in? Don't let them kid you. Everybody's in. I saw the flicker of the shadow of the first sin right there over the broken head of Abel. That's a museum piece for you. Don't be scared, though. It's all done with mirrors. Walk by my side now. Don't make any noise. One pair of footsteps is all that one's permitted at one time. See? Here's a door without a knob. And what is more remarkable, without a door. It leads into the closet of the psyche. Ah, what a place this is. Look, Black, you fan the air in their phosphorescent bubbles. What's this under a dome of glass in such a violet light? A brain? A human brain? Pickled in mercury? Well, well. Let's tip it. Let the timorous metal spill and show the convolutions where a transient soul once hid away. Yes, here we are, sharp as can be. The cerebrum, cerebellum, diary, corpus callosum, medulla oblongata. Fit royal sounding names for this majestic mush. Bow down, you budget makers. Here is greatness. Here is compactness and economy. Some thought's gone into this. Ah, what an engineer designed this package. Think of it. Suppose you went to some Bell Geddes and you said, design me something weighing a pound or two which can part sight from sound and smell from touch and fear from courage. It should love and it should hate upon the proper stimulus. Now, have you got that down? Wait, I'm not through yet. This gadget also must distinguish well between the smell of roses and of rotting eggs. Must move 100 muscles several feet away. Must ponder urns and theorems and compasses. Make speech, remind itself. Feel joy and terror. Comprehend the architecture of the crystal. Weigh the earth and chart the distant skies. It should be moral, too. And give out wit. Repair itself. Do automatic things. Cry, laugh, wring hands, dream. Die and resurrect itself within the cycle of a day. Now, that's not all, but it will give you something to get started on. Oh, and one thing more. I want this article in mass production. Millions and no royalties. It must be made of air and dust and water and a little passion and a little pain. All right. Got that all down? When can you let me have it? Want it by next Tuesday? Little chance. Yes, this is a handsome and a pat device. But from what hidden ventricle, what ounce of molding matter seeps the brown bilge of melancholy? Where are the dreary marshes of malaise? At what joint is the will attached to the subserving flesh? And where is it the will becomes will of the wisdom? Forgive my pointing, please. Is this where glooms and conscience sickness, superstitious awe and wall-eyed phobia suck nourishment? Is this the mazy area of complexes and inhibitions? Where does the mind play traitor? Is this the lobe of misery? And this the gland of dread? Well, time is getting on. Let's push. So long, brain.
Take it easy, Plato. Don't think anything we wouldn't think. Now back through doorless doors and down the ramp and past the eyeball of the Asiatic dragon discovered in a peat bog in South China. Then through the iron gate. Few steps west, then turn the corner, kick the carpet up, and open the trap door. Below, among an organ loft of stalactites and stalagmites, worn smooth by sweeping airs, is kept a captive wind. We'll pay it our respects. There. Do you hear it sighing? That is it. Let's take the spiral staircase down.
Ah, poor old Blow. How did you let them draw you into this? Yes, I know. You did it for a zephyr. I see you've just had dinner. 5 uprooted trees, a tattered flag, some dervish dust, 8 broken panes of glass, and 20 white caps set in brine. Stop growling, prisoner, and tell me, is it true what they say about that pass in the Andes? Was it really an affair with a traveling trade wind? Does the east wind sport with Dawn all night in a forbidden zone near Capricorn and say things causing her to blush? What of the rumor that the north wind wants to make a deal to swap some territory with the south? Does that mean we will come to glaciers once again? So soon? All civilization's assets to be frozen? Now that would be a pity, wouldn't it? Glare ice on Sunset Boulevard? Long Island annexed by the continent of Greenland? Seals in the swamps of Florida? Auroras burning over Galveston? The Sagra de Cristo Mountains bleached quite white? No, this must never be. The race of man needs cooling off, no doubt of that, but let us not be packed down like a bird's-eye meat chop. I hope the rumor's false, if only for the sake of the refrigeration industry. All right. I'm going now. You don't have to get sore. Blow me down. Let's take the elevator to a quiet place. I guess I tantalized the wind too much. It's fetched. That's plain to see. Can't blame it, really. No claustrophobia can match a wind. Where is that elevator? Oh, now, there we are. Just beyond that corridor whose ceiling is ablaze with all those fine Damoclean swords, each hanging by a brunette hair. Can't make us nervous, though. We're used to it. Self-service. See all the pretty buttons? Buttons with numbers on them, like the adding machine. Only not so bright. 87th floor? No, not so high. We want to get away from wind. I'll tell you what. Let's visit the mausoleum. 22nd story. Some friends of mine are buried there.
Slow this elevator.
But then the pull of gravity is something wicked here. So strong that birds are often grounded. Yes, and when the moon is full, they say no vapors rise. Nothing evaporates. The prayers of the pious in the nearby chapels, they too fall back to earth. One's height shrinks also. My, those shoes of mine are close. Intellects complain their brows are shortened here. And if you feel a drowsy feeling coming over you, that is the local gravity at work upon your eyelids. Even my song is falling flat. We made it. We have arrived. Please take your hat off. There are spirits here and many of them ladies. Of course, one cannot make them out with the untutored eye unless one's used to ectoplasm. There goes... Say, can you beat it? Robespierre. And in a huff, too. Wonder what's troubling him. Imagine, Robespierre. You meet the strangest spirit. Oh, well, qui vive moi. And don't look now, but that is Lafayette. No, don't tell him we are here. He knows it. And that faint glow below the chandelier, that's Joan of Arc.
Lead in a play by Bernard Shaw. And floating toward us now is just the taxi driver, a Parisian.
Now I understand it. We are in the French wing. Wrong place. We must retrace our steps. It's to the left of yon bottomless shaft.
Bonjour.
Bonjour. Bonjour, madame. Comment ça va?
Ah, bonjour, monsieur le général.
Pardonnez-moi.
Êtes-vous peut-être monsieur Victor Hugo?
Non. Excusez-moi, s'il vous plaît. That was silly. Thought he was Victor Hugo. That's where we should have gone. Yes, this way to the mausoleum. Dear me, I forget myself. This is a sacrilege, this whistling in the dark.
Yet, not too much so, come to think of it.
We are visiting the tomb of an announcer. Softly, softly, hat in hand. And here we stop. Alas, alas, here lies the unknown announcer. Spelled A-N-N-O-U-N-C-E-R. Brief pause while we identify the soul. He said, go now, and went. He said, don't fail, and failed. He said, remember the name. And now he can't recall his own. Tear off the top of his tombstone, lads, and send it in. A letter also saying why it's good to be immortal. Oh, Mr. A-N-N-O-U-N-C-E-R, I want to tell you about an easy way to rest in peace. No more need you wake up in the morning feeling alive and well. Tests show that you are dead. Insist upon it. Now make with the organ, please, a theme dear to his heart, a closing theme. Will Jim come back, or has he gone for good? Tune in tomorrow on some other sphere. Well, let's mooch some more among the monuments. Hold on a minute. Can I trust my sight? A sepulcher designed to wow the eye? You have my word for it. A neon tube around the headstone, flashing benedictions. Rest in peace. Rest in peace. Rest in peace. Rest in peace. There's a device to lull an energetic exhibitionist whose energy has been dissipated in the dust. This sign sells memory to wayfarers who might forget. Eternal neon, brightening a tomb to match a roadside stand. Let Ozymandias take note. Pharaohs observe, and lords and mighty men send memos to the nearest stooge. Here's how to prop up ego long after the strut has faltered and the jutting jaw has dropped away. Not just by heaping stones one on another till the pile is very high, not by imported marbles, deep-cut friezes, high-arched pantheons, but by the automatic sign, electric and alert, color, movement, patterns, didos, whirligigs, and acrobatic lamps, lights to bring out the moth in each of us. Now take a tip from us. If Cheops wants to guarantee his name another 6 millenniums, then let him hoist the Times Square Wrigley sign atop the tallest pyramid. A great gag, by the way. Phone publicity and get it in the mail before tonight. Can't you see it, Aggie? Sign of the fish. Aquatic vision. Mirage high over Giza's desert. Nothing beside remains save empty chiclet boxes and some tin foil. The lone and level sands stretch to the nearest highway. What do men want with competition beyond the business of living this known life? Sometimes the dead vie with each other, and the living too, for notice and respect. The modest and the poor ask only room enough to lie down comfortably, 6 feet of any ground. Whereas the pashas and the maharajas, they need city blocks or country acres, crypts of porphyry, high fences and deep vaults, and Taj Mahal. The end makes up for it, however. On Judgment Day, when the great trumpet plays the final lick, and all the dead arise, heels full of helium, the common folk will get there first. No locks to fuss with, and no granite slabs to lift, no grills to squeeze through, and no temple doors. No stopping long enough to read one's epitaph in bronze or gold. The simple dead, who simply lived and simply died, will simply rise, clutching a little loam in one hand as a passport. For angels at the border will demand to see a pinch of good brown earth before they let you in. Marble won't do, nor precious metals. No, none of that. Such baubles will suspicion you of playing dead. What do you want of the world after you've put it by? Now let's decide on that before you take another step. Posterity? Then get you and beget you. That's the surest way. But those who judge themselves according to the hypothetic judgment of the future, playing to galleries of generations 2,000 seasons hence, they are but hams with foresight. And foolish, too, because our sons are unpredictable. Their world will be their world, and all the ruin left them by their fathers shall belong to them, together with the sorry chattels of our age. They'll form their own opinions with no help from prompters in the wings. My, this is heavy. But I told you, warned you of the gravity. You could have tuned us out right then and there. It can't be said you didn't have a chance, Ducky. You had it and you muffed it. The downdraft's pretty bad here. Let's get out of it. Just in time, too. Night falls strangely in this fey resort. Globules of crude oil descend instead of dew. Dank and bituminous gases push through veins which some clawed hand has opened by remote control, throwing a switch which set all prayer wheels to spinning. This place is proof against intelligence and sensible procedure, all systems sprung. The stars take orders from mere glowworms, and the hours are askew, none knowing whether it is 60 minutes long or 82, or even, as in one case, minus 23. I didn't want to mention it before on pain of being called alarmist, but back there for a while I was pursued by one of those amphibian warts with which the region awkwardly abounds. Once they attach themselves to you, it's only surgery can help. We need some movement now to perk us up after that brush with static spirits. Something concrete. Something absolute. I've got it. The machine room. Down the undulating stairs and into the long chamber. What you are hearing is, of course, the greatest of machines. That was to be expected. He's an old Roman. Deus ex machina. Makes everything. Does anything. Solves problems. Are you hungry? There's the feed. Sick of winter? Look at all these springs. Want to get away? 12 excellent escapements. Take your choice. Too staid, are you? Here are some pulleys that are fast and loose. Want to climb higher in society? Then meet the governor. Unable to take hold of anything? That's what the crutch is for.
Baron, look at this bearing. Slow down, machine. Slow down and stop. Well done. I pat you on the rheostat. Now cool off, Deus Ex. I want to talk to you a while. I heard about your plans to manufacture happiness. No doubt it would be easy for you. Ever since you mastered your own master, nothing is beyond you. You'll be mining in the craters of the moon 2 months from now, or threading camels through a needle's eye. But I advise against the project to make happiness. I've seen the blueprints, and they're wonderful. I've seen the tins you plan to pack your patent in. They're sorotight and will resist a rainy day. That's fine, that's dandy, yes, but still, I must advise against it. Here's what will happen. Someone will come along and make a better happiness. No common, ordinary, everyday content, but bliss, deluxe, wrapped up in ribbon. This is inevitable. And while such infringements on your trademark occupy the civil bench and bar, there'll be much stir in cabinets throughout the world. People of every nation will demand their share of happiness, and governments will fall and revolutions sweep the length of continents. Traffic in the commodity will be corrupted, and the finest blends of joy be bootlegged quietly at night across the border. Despots will rise accusing some defenseless race of cornering the gaieties. There will be murder and oppression. Bombing planes will smash the tanks of happiness, and shiploads of the stuff be sunk at sea. And for the spoils of trading and the raw material of man's felicity, a century of wars will be engaged, which chroniclers will call the Happy War. And what's been done by way of savagery and past encounters will be dwarfed, as bows and arrows would have been at Dunkirk. Therefore, machine, take my advice. Do not make any happiness. Keep right on making clothespins. What? I thought you'd see it my way. You are very keen. Well, goodbye, DX. Don't work too hard. Now, having saved the world from Holocaust, I leave you, listener, to meditations of your own. I leave not by so obvious an artifice as a convenient sound effect man's door, but by irradiation. Yes, the work of sigma and omega rays upon my none too solid flesh. Evaporation and diminishment. See, hear, and note me but a moment longer. I am fading like cold breath on heated glass. The budget balances. The budget balances. Goodbye. 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 Goodbye.
You have been listening to A Soliloquy to Balance the Budget, an exercise for solo voice, written and directed by Norman Corwin, and performed by House Jameson as number 7 in the Columbia Workshop Cycle 26 by Corwin. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.